Hello and welcome to episode 135 of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Casson-Rennie,
and me. Oh, and me, yes, me, Al Coates. Oh, I'm all of a fluster. I've forgotten how to do it.
I know, I have as well. It took me four attempts to introduce it.
I know, I'm just totally perplexed. And you've got a new microphone, which is a whole...
Apparently, it's new. I mean, it just looks like a thing in front of my face that, you know...
Yeah. That's an hour we'll never get back of our lives as well.
I know, isn't it? I'm trying to sort that one out. Christ. Oh, what can you do, eh? New technology.
A man in your condition shouldn't be stressed by technology, that's for sure.
I know. It was getting there. I could feel the blood pressure popping up.
Oh, it's not even funny. So, quick news. I guess today we're sort of trying to get back in the swing of things, aren't we? Are we?
Yeah. Very easy, you know, mellow.
Yes, smooth, we're going to keep it smooth. And then I'm conscious that we're probably not going to have any guests on because that does take a lot of raw thinking. It's quite draining, isn't it? That sounds terrible.
Oh, it does.
The guests, and the guests
hard work.
It's so draining.
Yeah, especially when they send in the runners and, you know, they're and, you know, what
brown M&Ms, that sort of thing. Exactly. You know what they're like. So we're not going to have guests for a while. We've got a few people lined up, but we've got Sally Donovan, who was due to come on, and that was all in the diary. So Sally will be coming on, and she's going to talk about her new book, and there's all kinds of people lined up to come on. But I thought we're going to do occasional interviews, occasional podcasts every other week, back to normal, but we're going to look at news and pick up topics and stuff and just trying to keep it a bit chilled out.
Yeah, we'll get there.
So here you go.
I feel quite bad now you've just said that. Oh, we had all these people lined up to come on and then, you know.
Oh, it was terrible.
I know how to get rid of them.
A spurious excuse. Yeah. Clear the decks. No, I mean, there was, yeah, but don't feel bad. Nah, I don't care, honest, to be honest with you. That's fine. Anyway, so we're kind of back to the banter, but how are you before we go on? How's your week been?
How's my week been? Same old, really, you know? Either sitting down or lying down.
Yeah, I text you every morning. How are you doing?
I know you do. Bless you. It's nice to be loved. when I say drivel, but it's been, I think the days just blend into one as a rule. I've started to do a little bit. So this week, obviously it's still Easter holidays here. So Jacob's been at home helping me with little tasks. So, you know, things like putting in a load of laundry or cooking a meal. Although I did cook a meal the other day and Tris went, my God, you're so literal now. And I said, why? Because it was like chicken steaks in buns with chips. Yeah, just something quite easy to do.
Oh, living the dream.
But he also bought parma ham and, you know, all this stuff to put in with the burgers. But when he said, just do chicken burgers and chips, I just took it literally in the chicken burgers and chips. He came in and he's like, oh my God, is this what life is like? You're going to be so literal about stuff. And that was probably the highlight of the week, actually, was finding out the post, symptoms of the condition that I have at the minute and seeing what some of those are. So that was quite interesting. That's probably the highlight of my week. So that's about as exciting as it gets.
Oh, I'm finding it deeply frustrating, to be honest with you, in the sense that I feel like I can't just, I want to text you things like, can we do this or shall we do this? But I have to, I'll be honest with you, what I'm doing is I'm texting you first thing going, right, I pretend that I'm bothered. How are you?
Yeah.
How's it going? And then when you answer, then you go, oh, he's bothered. And then I'll wait like I've got a stopwatch going, right, is this an appropriate time then to ask him, where the hell's the password for this?
Yeah. Or 60 minutes later, generally, I've been keeping notes. I've been keeping timings and stuff.
Honestly, it's all good. I feel like I'm one of those people who like has to be taught how to function in normal life. And this is,
is normal life. Yeah. But it's interesting because I think there's a lot of fear as well, because obviously everybody's like worried about putting too much on me and stuff. And I got a hilarious Facebook message from somebody who used to be on my team at Adoption UK, and she's remained a good friend yesterday. And she went, I daren't message you before now because of the very strong message that Tris put contacting you. And I mean, you know, I'm not replying to all messages straight away, and it might take a day or two, but you know, it's fine. Get in contact, you know, whatever. I'm easy. And the thing with you is that nothing's too stressful because I just tell you, shut up. So it's easy.
You know? Yeah, I have noticed you just sometimes ignore me for like exactly. a day or so. So I know that you're comfortable to just kind of totally dismiss anything I'm asking you. It's totally fine. Anywho, well, Scott, all of these plans are way too late. And since you've been, while you were sleeping or whatever you were doing, lots and lots, that's a film, isn't it? While you were sleeping.
Yeah,
all of these amazing things happened, and well, there's lots of news updates. So I thought we could do like a you know those word association games that you play. You know, I say cheese, and you say
crackers.
I see exactly. So I thought we could do that, but do that with news. So I'm rather than trying to fill your head full of loads of reading, because I normally send you things. Read this for the podcast. Read that for the podcast.
And I never do.
I know, but what you do is when that I know. I'm under no illusion about what goes on down here, that I send them through to you, and then literally as the podcast starts, you go, oh, I better open them up, and you read them with one eye and talk to me with the other, with your mouth while you're doing it at the same time. Anyway, complicated.
And text for the other. Not that I've got three eyes, but, you know.
Yeah, but a strange man. And suddenly everything became clear. So I just thought we would go through some of the news and a few of the happenings, a few of the online things, a few of the national stuff that's going on, and perhaps we could just unpick some of that and so a little news update, really.
Sounds like a plan.
A cunning plan. So cunning, you could pin a tail on it and call it a fox. I think probably the most important one is, if you recall, and you can use the convenient excuse of, oh, short-term memory, don't remember.
Yeah, I can.
That's convenient.
Amazing.
So we've had this thing rumbling on, the Somerset judgment, haven't we?
Yes.
Well, lots of people are concerned about the validity of their adoption order of children's kind of their route through the care system, and, you know, whether medicals were put in place.
That's it, I was just trying to remember what it was, but it was the medicals, wasn't it?
It was. So there was, and I think there was a question mark around whether, because it hadn't been, medicals had been undertaken by people who weren't qualified, or they were they weren't doctors, they were like, you know, not saying a nurse isn't qualified, but they weren't.
No. Healthcare assistants and things like that.
Yeah. First aiders.
cleaners, you know, delivery drivers. I mean, we joke, it's not a joking matter, but, you know, you could just kind of,
Well, I mean, it is a challenge sometimes getting people to join panels, isn't it? Especially professionals if they're busy. So, you know, you can understand how, someone who's been on a first aid course, because well, give that the once over. Yeah, it's fine. That's totally dismissive of the whole system, isn't it? How on earth I've managed to keep my registration this long is a genuine miracle.
No clue.
Well, I worked out why I have never had any complaints.
Oh, registration. Because nobody listens.
Well, firstly, no one's even slightly bothered. and secondly, that reminds me, I got trolled on Facebook.
Tell me about that in a minute.
Right. Okay. So the second reason is, I think that because I have, I've got lots of names. I've got one name. Actually, I've got two, but I've got different. And I think people are not quite sure. So who I'm known as in the absolute the full world is Al Coates, but my actual.
It's not your real name, is it?
It's not my real name.
No.
So people are probably desperately searching on social work register, because you can actually go on there and list of all the social workers and try and can't quite work out who I am.
Ah, that would make sense.
It would make perfect sense, wouldn't it? Not that I do anything controversial, anyway. Anyway, I got trolled on Facebook. So I got trolled. I can't remember. What was it about? I said something and someone said, some snarky comment about my children.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I just I blocked them. Well, I did what everyone does. So I went and looked through their profile, and they'd kind of put a message to anyone who was looking through their profile. So they were probably a serial offender. And then I blocked them. So I've never been trolled on Facebook before. So that was quite
exciting. Facebook, that's a new one. Yeah.
Yeah, because you have. So, it's all very interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the Somerset judgment.
God, I've got so much stuff that I wanted to tell you, and all these things talking. I'm just like. Blah, 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 blah.
Have you got a. What's it? My memory. Go on, keep going.
Diagnosis?
Yes, that's the word. Yeah, well done.
No, but do you know what? I'm getting therapy now.
I know.
No, like properly. And I've told my therapist, I said, how long does this go on? He went, well, we're going for quite a while. I said, well, you need to invest in a couch, because I really want to be like, I want to do the whole laying down on a couch and do the, you know, like talk about, I don't know, what my first memory was of coming out of the womb or something. Yeah.
God, you might have a rebirth situation.
Me wailing, I want to be born.
Yeah. And then all the noises come with it.
He'd have to get into a sleeping bag and then be birthed into his office. Am I dismissing? So I tell you, there'll be therapists. They'll be like looking for my name now, won't they? They'll be going, I've dismissed the whole therapy.
Oh my session. God.
But what he said he was going to do, my therapist, who is, if you know the story of my dog, Fat Dave. So he's the therapist that's connected to that story of Fat Dave.
Yeah.
He's going to do some electric shock treatment. Oh, no, it's not that. Can't be electric shock treatment. I don't think
that's legal these days.
You go and he's got a car battery on the table.
No, for you, it need to be plugged into the mains, I think.
This might sting a bit, but you'll feel so much better.
Just please stick these pads to your temples.
Yeah, just touch your tongue on this.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness, I'm so going to lose my registration. No, he's going to, it's buzzers, it's the EMDR. He's going to do stuff, I don't know, he's going to do stuff with buzzers. But it was really interesting because we were talking about how like they're using your left brain, right brain, and it's left hand, right hand. But he said, you really get a lot out of walking and running, he said, and that's left, right. Anyway, Somerset judgment.
Come back to that another day. Yeah.
This is 6 weeks of pent up me needing to talk to you on a podcast. It's like, blah, 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 blah. I am so giddy. So the Somerset judgment, I've got, and actually Adoption UK put out a really helpful crib sheet and a link to someone who much wiser than us who, was able to give a judgment. But basically, so Sir Andrew, the judgment came out, I think it was last Thursday, which was, again, much longer. And a lot of people, what I am conscious of is a lot of people have had an awful lot of anxiety about this. And I've sort of, on the boards that I've been on, other groups, people sort of saying, you know, people who are sort of in the process, who've, it's kind of like they were literally, I'm due to start introductions on Friday, and people being told, you can't start. Because until we get this judgment, which must be horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you wait?
In terms of
from matching to introductions?
Not long. It was like 6 weeks.
Oh, that's still a long time, isn't it?
Is it? So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you think back 2007, I'm sure it was 6 weeks. It might have even been four, which isn't too long. But at the time it just felt that was what it was. And you know, like we weren't really in a place to question it. And we're doing that thing where you try and live your last bits of pre-kid life kind of thing. I don't know. It's hard to explain, isn't it? Because I see often people talking about delays and stuff, and you think, well, what is a delay? 3 months, I would say that's quite a long time. You know,
yeah,
but like 4 to 8 weeks, I would say that's quite normal, should be normal. I don't know, that's an interesting one.
I have no recollection of how long I waited,
yeah. But when you're in the there and then, it does feel like everything's just dragging on, doesn't it?
Painful, isn't it?
Yeah,
so to be for the judgment, someone to come along just arbitrarily and say, we don't even know how long, but it's not going ahead until this is resolved. So I think that for a lot of people, this will be a huge cause of stress and strain. And, you know, I remember the days dragging, actually, because the second time we adopted, it was through foster care. So they're already there. And the third time.
Yeah. That's different, isn't it?
And I can't remember with my 10-year-old. Anyway, it's not important. It's all done and dusted now. Mm. This is Sir Andrew McFarlane, who is the president of the family courts. And he said, for the reasons I've given and in the absence of some very significant evidence as to a child's health, which was not otherwise known to the court, it is unlikely that an application to revoke a placement order will be justified solely on the basis of that medical elements of the adoption regulations 2005 had been breached. When adoption has taken place, the established authorities indicate that it will only be in wholly exceptional circumstances that an existing adoption order will be set aside. It is difficult, if not impossible, to contemplate circumstances relating to a child's health which were not known to the court when the adoption order was made, being of sufficient weight to meet that very high test. Basically saying, they broke the law, but there's nothing necessarily in that information that is going to stop or turn an adoption order around.
Yeah.
So I'll give you the what happens next. If the adoption order has been made, nothing needs to be done. If the placement order has been made and the child has been placed with prospective adoption orders, but no adoption are yet made, local authorities must review paperwork and if it's not compliant, update the CPR or Annex A report, which I would imagine is frustrating if you're waiting on a court date.
Yeah, being able to an application. Yeah.
If a placement order has been made but the child not placed with adoptive parents, prospective adopters, review the paperwork. If the placement order has not been yet made, the local authority must notify the court and the court must consider what is required. And all of the local authorities must review the process and ensure that they're compliant with the regulations. So that feels like a... I mean, it's odd because I think that like yourselves, like the likes of you and I, we're, it seems like historic stuff, but there's a lot of people in the process, isn't there? There'll be, whatever, 3,000 people who are...
Yeah. But also, by that. I mean, was there like an initial... So the reason that this came to your head was it a specific medical reason why it was questioned? Because, I mean, I kind of get what he's saying. So that, you know, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, there could be specific differences and reasons for a removal. If it's, I don't know enough about removals to be able to really.
I don't know. I mean,
this, but it just seems to me like if it's a medical reason, you know, and a birth parent isn't able to look after and support a child with a medical condition.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess in some ways it's all front facing because in the sense that there's the reason for removal is unlikely to be related to a medical condition.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I guess the issue might be that if you're an adoptive, I guess that it doesn't really address what I think is that perhaps you're an adoptive parent and they then go back and do a medical and they discover there's a genetic condition that you're not made aware of, but you are now sat with this child in your house and an adoption order is not made and you go, oh, hang on. I'm being careful with my language, but you've committed to a child who maybe has got a really uncertain future, and it's not if you'd known that before you made that commitment.
Yeah.
Oh, that's messy. I mean, I suppose that's like any parent, you know.
Well, of course it is. Yeah, and I'm not too sure. There's many. Well, I mean, I very rarely hear of any kind of cases where that becomes an issue because you know the majority just kind of continue on, even though they're kind of fighting for extra support or additional. You know, whatever it is that they need to be able to do it, but okay,
yeah.
Well, I guess it clears it up a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you've got a kind of a decision being made on it, yeah. But it doesn't take away from the fact that it happened in the first place, and that you know the medical advice didn't come from where it should have come from. On whatever case it was, that, you know.
They didn't follow through the law, basically. They didn't comply with the law.
Yeah, the guidance.
I guess it's maybe a teething pain of the RAAs, and that's all in the mix of it, isn't it? Where you've gone from three or four local authorities who've got their own panels, and then you've got to turn it into an RAA, and do they run...
But do you think that, I mean, I'm not being critical of that as a potential reason, but all panels that I've ever sat on have really high levels of quality assurance and a well-trained and experienced panel chair wouldn't pass, it wouldn't kind of recommend, make a recommendation without having the full facts in front of them. So... You know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of internal investigations going on in terms of how the panel works and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I'm just thinking about my own experience of being on panels, and I'm sure you're the same. You know, if there wasn't specific medical advice from the medical advisor who is named for the agency, then would you, as a panel chair, potentially, you know, even hear the panel?
Yeah, I mean, I guess then it's maybe down to panel admin because, you know, the panel admin would say everything's compliant and you would, as the chair, would you then go, well, prove it?
Yeah, I know, because you don't, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, some of the papers I get when you see a prospective doctor's report, all you see is what information is filled in by the person that's filled in the form. You don't actually see, you know, you don't necessarily see the kind of the medical report, should we say. So yeah. Yes, I guess in some ways that, but I'm just saying that, you know, yeah. I'm sure there's a few heads rolled internally as well as externally.
Very stern conversations with HR.
I'm afraid so, yeah.
That old chestnut. So that was one thing that's happened. I think that's probably everyone's really happy that's kind of come to an end. I think while you were sleeping as well, the nether time when you were gone, there's also, I think it's worth noting that there's a bit of a hoo-ha on, there's been quite a hoo-ha on Twitter about some research that came out from Dominic McSherry and I'm going to pronounce this name wrong, Grainy McAnny, yeah. And this is from, this is published in the Child Abuse and Neglect Journal. Well, I'm getting that wrong. School of Psychology from Ireland. And it's describing exploring the relationship between adoption and psychological trauma for children who are adopted from care, a longitudinal study.
I'm not scrolling too much at the minute, but yes, I did see something about this, but I didn't really do a lot of investigation.
No, it was the threads were immeasurably long, and it was basically some academic research that had come out that was kind of, it was very much focused on the idea, is adoption in of itself a traumatic event? And what are adopted people's experience of trauma? And I think it got itself, regardless of the outcome of the research, I think it got itself into really hot water. And I think Dominic McSherry was kind of, he was punching back against people who were coming out and going, you can't say this, you're not an adopted person, which is a reasonable kind of assertion. And he was kind of going, yeah, but the research is there. So it got into, I don't want to get into I don't want to start a button fight, but let's just lean into this and see how we go.
I thought we were playing word association. This is not word association.
This is not. You'll need to lie down this afternoon. It was very much, his research is sort of saying that actually, well, his research is of contemporary adopted people. And this is a conversation I have with people, you know, that the experience of even some of people over like 30 and 40 who are adopted is not the experience of our young adults. That there's an awful lot of adversity pre-adoption. And so he was sort of he was focusing in on that, which is, and he was just kind of, people were saying, yeah, but my experience of adoption is traumatic. And he was going, well, my research says it isn't.
Right.
And that's me paraphrasing. And they were going, well, that's my experience. And he was going, yeah, well, my research says this. And the battle lines became really, really drawn. I'll put the research into the show notes and I'll post it up because it is really interesting. But they adopted 17, well, sorry, the participants were 17 adopted people, adopted children interviewed in their adoptive homes. And it's been an ongoing, it's like a longitudinal study, so they keep going back to the same people. Right. So even some of the people were saying, you're asking children in their they're sat in their adoptive mum and dad's living room and you're asking them, how's it going for you?
Yeah.
Is that a safe environment for children to speak about in?
And I mean, you know, no offense. I mean, Dominic McSherry's has a really good reputation and, you know, hopefully we should get him on, actually.
Shall we get him on?
Yeah, let's get him on. I forgot what I was going to say now.
Click your fingers, make that happen. All right, I'll put a note.
I forgot what I was going to say now.
You said he's got a good reputation.
Yeah, that was it.
Sorry, yeah. Fine.
I know. It's come back to me. 17 isn't a lot.
No.
I mean, I get it. Don't get me wrong, but 17 people isn't a lot. And you know, we've done like little polls before, haven't we? Where we've had, in fact, who was it? Oh, there's somebody else. I'm not going to mention the name, but somebody else did a very quick kind of survey on social media. This was a couple of years ago now, and you know, they were criticized for it was basically said that this doesn't, you know, reflect everybody who has this experience, because you're only asking people who have access to social media. So not the same thing, but there are similarities there. I mean, if you, you know, and whether it's longitude, that word or not.
That word.
Yeah. 17 isn't a lot. To be able to say, this is how it is, you know. So
yeah,
I understand that, you know, 17 people have said what they've had to say, and, you know, I'm not dissing their kind of experiences, but I'm just saying that, you know, for others it might be completely different. And as ever, and this is what I have noticed when I have been scrolling recently, there is definitely beginning to become an awareness of some of the differences of the reasons and the way that adoption works in each of the separate countries, mm-hmm. not necessarily the kind of experiences of being adopted or some of the traumas that come with that, but certainly there, you know, there's more of an understanding now about, you know, the kind of generations and the differences of, you know, relinquishment. And then, you know, like you say, you know, adversity that some of the children kind of experience. So there's a gap there as well. And I think that, some of the ones I'm reading about from, you know, or reading information from, who were adopted maybe in the 60s, 70s, who are clearly not happy that they were adopted or had a great experience of it. There's a criticism from them about younger people's experiences, if that makes sense. And I don't think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I did the webcast with Elaine, and we're saying just there's such diversity of experience, and there's so many routes, but there's really clear topics and themes about adopted people's experience of identity and loss, and, you know, chronic loss, and trauma, you know, their experience of trauma of the act of adoption. And I think that, and that is like an onion. So people, like all of us, as we develop as adults and as we get older, we see things differently. You know, I remember being quite like reactionary as a young 20s person, thinking I really, you know, all the stuff that my parents had done wrong, quite angry. And then at 35, I was like, oh, maybe I see a bit clearer now. And then at 50, I go, all right, I get it. You know, I kind of, you know, maybe there's some things that would change, but I have so much more understanding of myself and my response to different events in my life.
Yeah.
I think I'll put the link to the research. And then a friend of mine, when I was at university, we got taught how to read research, was basically read the abstract, which is the first bit, and then read the conclusions. And if those kind of tick a box, then dig deeper into it, how it was done.
Oh, okay. But yeah.
Don't try and read the methodology and stuff unless you kind of, if you feel if you're comfortable with that, because it can be really dry as sticks and like, get to the story. Yeah. So the conclusion, and there's some interesting stuff, the implications for policy and practices. First, there are a number of instances where children experience psychological trauma due to removal from an established foster placement to an adoptive placement. And I think that was, you know, he's acknowledging that the act of adoption can be traumatic. And he's kind of saying that we need to understand that that is the experience of children being moved into an adoptive placement. Second one is the ongoing sort of psychological presence of birth family, which needs to be addressed really and looked at. Just reading.
He's multitasking, folks. He's multitasking.
Well, I'm reading.
They can't get the words out while he's reading.
Because I'm struggling to do one thing at the moment.
He's gone from giddy to kind of coming down the scale.
I think that just that he acknowledges that actually those very first few months and weeks, months, days, weeks, months, years of adoption can be really challenging for children moving into placement. And I look back now, I mean, can you remember the first days and hours and weeks of?
I can. Yeah, I really can. I can understand. I totally. Yeah. It's hard, isn't it? I actually have vivid memories of all three in the first kind of couple of days. And, you know, whilst there was a shed load of excitement for all three of them, there was also, you know, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to do it. No way. My God. Yeah.
Because I was thinking about these experiences that we have, and I was thinking, it's almost like there's two narratives. I can remember being in it and being it being quite overwhelming and quite, and also almost my children's needs being invisible to me, like really reacting to what was happening right in front of me. And I look back now and I can see a totally different story happening. I can see, I can see their needs so plainly now that I just maybe couldn't at the time.
Yeah.
And that's not everyone's experience, but I think, so Dominic highlights lots of interesting stuff, and I just think it's all been, I think like any Twitter thing, though, you know, people have jumped on the comments, not the research, and I think there's legitimate, but again, like good research, he has kind of acknowledged limitations of his own research, and that's part of what you do in your research. You go, got this, but we could have got this, or we could have done it this way and stuff. So I'll put the links in. I really recommend people. I'll put it in our Facebook group. Because we got Austrian adoption. Yeah. We set up a group, didn't we? Aren't we clever? Did. Yeah. And then you went and nicked off, and so it became like a support group for me. That's not true. So that was the third thing. Really briefly, hey, I went to the House of Lords while you were sleeping.
I know, I did watch you. I watched you live, actually.
Did you?
I did, yes. I can't remember where I was. If it was I at home or was I still in hospital? I can't remember.
You were still in hospital.
Was I?
I'm sure you were in hospital. Yeah, it was a Monday. Oh, so we, like literally an email came. I think you fell ill on
I went on the Sunday and the email came in on the Tuesday because I did check it actually. Did do a little bit of research. Oh,
it was mad because like you're answering emails or you were, I couldn't find out what the hell you were doing. You're like literally people are saying he's Tris is going, he's very poorly, he might die. He's answering bloody emails. And he's answering like random things to people and it was like total chaos.
Yeah, it's because I was high. I keep saying I was high as a kite from the medication.
Very, very high.
It was lovely.
I'm sure it was.
And my life is gone.
So we got an email addressed to me, I'd like to know. Normally we scramble for the interesting emails, don't we? And we avoid the difficult ones. Mm-hmm. Oh, and that was another thing. So I'd got really into the real groove of answering emails on your behalf as like some sort of mad flamboyant Scotsman. Yeah. And so I had to stop because I thought, oh, it's quite disrespectful now you're ill.
Especially because I could have died.
Oh yeah, milking it now. So I got invited to go and speak about the so the children.
Can we just before you do that, can I just say you have spoken to a doctor who has informed you the implications of my injuries and what could have happened. We had this discussion the other night, and I was like, okay, that's quite tough actually. And there's you replying to emails on my behalf, taking the mickey out of the people.
So it is quite...
Naughty coaxy.
That's me. So they were asking us to go and contribute to the House of Lords Committee on the Children and Families Act. Yeah, which is really exciting, but I couldn't quite work out what they wanted. Like, me there.
Yeah. Well, probably they didn't. They probably thought you were my PA. But I would say probably to do with the fact that you're a social worker, you're a parent.
Yeah.
You've also got a three-letter thing after your name as well.
Too soon.
And you would have been put forward for it by somebody, probably somebody from the DfE, I'd imagine.
Yeah, but the email came to the podcast. Anyway, so
who knows?
So I listen to everyone else, and if people do get the chance, it is really interesting because it's people like Professor Beth Neal went on, and she just it was meant to be two people doing an hour's they do an hour together, and the person Beth was with had fallen out, so Beth just like went for it. She was just fantastic, and if you ever get the chance, like saying to Beth Neal, what do you think? And she just gave a really fantastic response about what she thought the primary issues were facing adoption. She talked about race disparity, a whole raft of things. And then you had like Sarah Jahal. You had, I've forgotten the other people. From PAC UK. PAC and your UK. Old boss, Joanne Alper.
Joanne Alper did some as well. It was PACT, wasn't it? PAC Charity. PACT. Yeah.
PACT.
Packed with a P, P-A-C-T.
You know what I'm like with those blooming organisations.
Yeah. You get all confused, don't you?
I'm a simple lad.
Yeah, I haven't watched the Beth one yet, but what was interesting about your one was it was two adoptive parents with different levels of professional experience working in the sector as well, because obviously you're a social worker working in fostering, and Naomi, who you were on with, she's a legal, isn't she?
Solicitor, yeah. Consultant solicitor.
Yeah. And it was really interesting to listen to, because I expected to be going, no, that's not true, Naomi. No, that's not true. You're a solicitor. You don't know how this is. No, just about Naomi. Right. Because you and I generally agree on things to do with adoption and how, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why we get on. But I expected myself to be fighting Naomi like from the screen going, no, that's not true. You're a solicitor. But actually, even your experiences and Naomi's experiences, you know, you were both in agreement, like that's what we hear every day from people. And it was a really, really interesting one to listen to. I've not listened to Beth yet, so I must listen to that, because I'll probably get my popcorn out and sit and...
Yeah. So it was really, it was a fantastic experience. And my mother was like, when I told my mother, she was giddy. And she said, please don't wear a check shirt. She said, please don't. She said, you go in the House of Lords, plain shirt. And I was going, oh, Mom. Like I went to 15-year-old, Mom.
Yeah. Kevin and Perry Moore.
Totally. I was going, honestly, Mom, I'm 50 years old. And she was going, I don't care. You need to wear a shirt. Mm. Anyway, I wore my hat.
But she didn't tell you about the hat, but she told you about the shirt.
Yeah, but you've seen my hair, haven't you, Scott?
Well, I have. It's not pretty.
It's like an explosion in a mattress factory. It's a total bomb site.
So is there a plan for it?
My wife and my children have told me to grow my hair, so I'm growing it. And it's, you know, it's years since I've had the hair this long. And it's just, in the interim years, it's gone away and had a really hard think about what it wants to do with itself.
And half of it came back.
Yeah, not the half we were expecting, though. So it's gone curly and everything. So now I can't take my hat off because I do look like a half-plucked chicken. It's just a mess.
I do wonder if maybe they were hoping that it would come back and you could have a similar style to me, you know, the
vampire. The quiffy.
The kind of
vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
There's time yet.
If not, you could always go to Turkey and have some hair implants or something, you know.
Oh, I could, couldn't I? Do an Elton John. I could do that.
Tris is always talking about that. He wants to do that. So.
Does it? He's got hair, though.
Not really.
I know he's in the room, so we'll be careful.
Yeah, exactly. I have to be very careful, Isaac.
Yeah, speaking code. Yeah. Is he there just in case you have a moment? Is he going to step in?
No, he's working away in the background. He's busy building his empire, you know.
Oh, taking over the world.
Whilst Jacob sits in the kitchen area waiting to go for lunch, because it's Friday, isn't it? So it's lunch out Friday today. So
champion.
Mm. Anyway,
that's fine.
So you're going to put the link to the
I'll put Laura that in as well. Notes, I don't think people. I put it out on the podcast anyway while you were sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
So people can find it there. It's a couple of episodes back. But no, it was an amazing experience. And lots of, the thing that I had the questions beforehand and I thought the thing that I see missing in all of the other evidence is this kind of this sort of plain speaking sense of you need to go and ask the people, what is the major issue? Yeah. Major issues we need to ask the people who are not party to it. So, that was the thing that I think really struck a chord. And then the thing about racial disparity, everyone who's been on the evidence, been here is white. And I'm not, you know, I'm not woke. I'm not like one of those, but come on, let's talk to some people who've got lived experience of this.
Yeah.
And then I realized I woke up in the middle of the night afterwards. And so that it was lords and ladies and, you know, baronesses of this and that. And I couldn't, you didn't get introduced. It wasn't a round robin or I'm the Lord of Whirligig. And there might have been, but I was totally focused on the game. I was just totally like, right, I've got the things I've got to say. I went all in politician. Like, I don't care what you're asking me. This is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And then I went around and so everyone was white apart from this one black woman. And literally, and I just had a total mind funk through the whole thing. I just said what I said. And then I woke up through the night and I went, oh my goodness. They asked me about racial disparity and it was Doreen, Lawrence, who is Stephen Lawrence's mum. She's the, you know, she campaigned against the Met Police and got the, and you go, oh my goodness. And I had like an opinion about racial disparity. I can't believe they put me in that. But, and so I was like mortified that I'd, and I went through everything I'd said and God, was I an idiot? But if I recall, she was nodding heads. So.
Yeah,
probably very gracious.
What struck me was they were very professional. They were very, I mean, I wasn't there, but I'm just saying from what I got from what I watched, they were very professional. They'd done a lot of work on this, and it's not just a kind of, I'll sit here, ask a few questions, and then, you know, to, the questions that they asked, you would need to have done your homework to be able to ask those questions.
Yeah, they're informed.
Which I think was great. And the other thing as well, which you and I both kind of had a bit of back and forward on, was the fact that there's, you know, there was no voices of adoptees on that kind of that had been asked yet. So between us, we came up with a little list, didn't we? But I'm sure there was more that could have been contacted, but hopefully those people have been contacted to kind of give evidence as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that was the bit that I found rewarding, was that at the end, something like the, one of the analysts came up to me and said, look, can I have 5 minutes with you? Give me a list of names, which, and I thought, right, that's job done, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was, I mean, saying to you, I was like with my sieve head going, Scott, I could literally can't think of anyone.
But I wasn't in the moment, was I? So I just rolled off a couple of names to you and you went, oh, off we go.
Yes, you, yeah, so you press the button.
That's how we roll.
Tick him over and give you another shot of methadone. Exactly. Not heroin, I was going to say.
Methadone? I think you mean morphine, maybe.
I do mean morphine, yeah.
Yeah.
All in the same family.
Yeah, and does the same trick.
And I think the last thing online is just maybe, and to note that the Joint Committee on Human Rights at the House of Parliament started to take evidence from adopted people in relation to historical abuses and historical adoptions and stuff. So, and Liz Harvey, who, so I've spoke to Liz Harvey and she said she'd come on the show. She was telling me a bit busy. And also I think it totally exhausting sort of putting herself front and centre of that. Yeah. But there was a bit of controversy because Pam Hodgson was invited, then uninvited. Did you?
No, I missed that when I was sleeping.
Yeah, so there was a few, you know, like anything, anyone can submit written evidence, which again was controversial because they submitted it, and you can submit it anonymously, but then they accidentally leaked the names or attributed it to who it was. And so there was this huge furore because there was people had said, well, I'm happy to contribute, but I'm not going to put my name to it. Went and put the names to it and published it. So total kibosh of an event. But then, so a few days before, then there was like scheduled evidence sessions, a bit like what I did, but in the House of Commons, you know, that was terrible. It's going on my CV, by the way.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah. My mother's told everyone. She's going around knocking on the doors of the street and telling people to watch the live. So Liz Harvey was invited to give evidence and she did really well, but she was also, there's an article in The Guardian where she's kind of articulated that, but really put herself out there, really made, you know, again, sharing so much of herself that's so vulnerable, you know, making herself so vulnerable. And I would imagine that's just exhausting and, you know, total power to her elbow. But then why Pam Hodgson was pulled? Lots of people, conspiracies around that, theories, or just not knowing why, no sort of rational explanation why you wouldn't have Pam Hodgins on, because...
Oh, exactly, yeah. She's like... Yeah. The thing is, you might not want to hear what she has to say, but the way she puts it in her delivery and the message is, it's bang on. So what? I don't understand why they would...
Strange. And a real integrity about Pam and... You know, not that there wasn't with anyone else, but just you think she's the intersection of all of this, someone who's campaigned, who can bring together lots of voices, which is what you know, if I was sat in a committee, I'd want someone who could speak beyond their own experience and be able to draw in all the other people. Yeah. And Pam's just well connected. So that was a bit of a thing going on there that people may or may not have missed, but we would have probably covered that in a podcast before now. So
I missed it. So there you go.
You did miss it. I'm not sure what other news is coming up, but I don't think there's anything... Pressing, there's always something though, isn't there? So,
I mean, we're still waiting on the news of the new appointment, you know.
What appointment? Yeah.
Who's going to be taking over at AUK Towers? We're still waiting.
Oh, yeah. Because that was all a bit of a hoo-ha, wasn't it? Oh, wait till the end.
me.
You're waiting on tentacles.
Do that. Tristan's just gone, me.
It's a cruel joke.
It's a very cruel joke. It was. I mean, I went to sleep and then when I woke up, the previous one had gone. So that was quite quick.
Yeah, I mean, in the landscape, it's a really significant position, isn't it?
It is, yeah, exactly. And especially, you know, if they wait too long, then, I mean, I'm sure they've got a contingency plan in place for it to kind of, for the ship to keep steering whilst, you know, they're running probably. If my experience of when you left is anything to go by, then, you know, the chair of the trustees, my words are now disappearing now, but the chair of the trustees will probably be kind of there, but more visible than he would have been previously. And, you know, the SLT will be kind of running the show. But it's, you know, if you leave it too long in a big organization like that, then, you know, some things might get kind of left off.
Yeah, I mean, you've got that experience, haven't you? That you know, because there was a gap between Hugh leaving and the new person being appointed. Because it's not it's not with respect.
It's not like shop work, is it? It's not like someone taking over the till at Asda. Let's face it, you know.
Yeah, you got to get the right person.
Yeah, and it can take them a while to kind of get up to speed with what's going on, and you know, there's lots of different kind of business areas. Well, I say business areas, but you know what I mean, like service areas to get your head around. There's policy to get your head around. There's, you know,
and even if you appoint someone, you find the right person, they may have because of the nature of the job they may be in, they might be on a 3-month, you know, notice themselves. So it could So it'd be interesting to see. And I mean, Sue took the Adoption UK in a really specific direction, I think. Would that be right to say, or reflecting that she took it to a more, took over the ship at an interesting time after Hugh had kind of had to really rejig the whole thing, a difficult period. Sue took over it, and much more campaigning, things like the barometer, which have been fantastic. But there might be a different direction for the next person. Exactly. There might have a different emphasis.
Yeah, I think when, you know, Hugh stabilized it in time for Sue to come in and then take it, you know, and really turn it around financially and, you know, visibility wise as well, you know, and, you know, it has grown into quite an organization. I think what happened when Hugh was there was that online stuff started to kind of pop up, and they weren't quick. Well, I think this was before Hugh, and in Hugh's tenure, the online started to pop up, and you know, they just weren't quick enough to get on the back of it. So, you know, things like what's that online webinars? family finding thing,
Link Maker.
That's it. Link Maker came along and, you know, knocked Children Who Wait, which was, you know, the massive part of Adoption UK's income out of the water. So stuff like that, you know. But, you know, in fairness to Sue, you know, and some of the people she worked with, including me, you know, kind of put it on a
even keel
trajectory and an even keel that's, you know, much better than it was. So fingers crossed it will still be here in 50 years.
Excellent. That was the right answer.
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go off and do something much more interesting.
I am as well.
You're going to go and have your lunch. I'm going to go and have my lunch, but mine will be like a cheese toastie or something. Yours will be like a Jacobean banquet to build your strength.
There's nothing wrong with a cheese toastie. Come on.
Excellent. Well, my dogs are having, if you don't know whether you can hear, but my dogs are having some sort of fit, so I'm going to go off and see you to them.
Fabulous.
So, on that note, Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.